In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
All right, good morning to everybody out there. Happy Saturday to all of you listening. This is the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN, and I am your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports, May 24th, the year of our Lord, 2025. First String Sports, place to be, where I do my show every Saturday, 10 to 12. Not every Saturday, because last week I was on assignment, as the Giants broadcast team likes to say. And lots of stuff to catch up on today. Oh, my gosh, what a wild, crazy day of baseball yesterday. I don't know how many of you out there were watching a game, following on Twitter, coaching a game, heck, playing in a game. Gosh, there was some crazy, crazy stuff going on in the playoffs yesterday regarding baseball. Softball playoffs were this week. We're going to get to some softball as well, but my gosh, controversial calls at home plate, wild endings, Twitter wars, saw a bunch of stuff on Twitter, crazy stuff, a little bit for everybody today, but just a jam-packed show I have planned for you guys today. Again, live here at First String Sports, Blackstone Avenue in between Herndon and Sierra. Do my show from the Letterman's Jacket Room, so the ambiance is absolutely perfect. There's Sanger to my left, Madera, Torres, there's Kerman, Bullard, Central, Sanger, Hoover, Patriots. They're actually playing their baseball game today. The 15 seed is still alive. The Edison Tigers, Fresno Christian, Clovis North. Oh, my gosh. Clovis North baseball game yesterday against Centennial. We're definitely going to get into that. Kingsburg behind me. Lots of Kingsburg talk as well. But, yeah, excited to bring the show to you this morning. Let's get into who we're coming on. Who's coming on to talk high school sports today. All right, so we got after the break, after I go over all the stuff that happened yesterday, the baseball championships are set. Valley Strong Ballpark in Visalia. It's going to be starting next Wednesday, believe it or not. The softball championships are set at Margie Wright Diamond on the campus of Fresno State. So we're going to get into all of that. But after the break, Gabe Camarillo is coming on, Fox 26 sports broadcaster. We're going to talk to him not for a super long time, about 10 to 12 minutes, about the baseball action yesterday. He was actually at the Kingsburg Washington Union game that I was at. He got some really, really good footage. And then after that, speaking of Kingsburg, Coach Jim Cranford's coming on. His Vikings beat Washington Union in a classic, 1-0. They're going to play for the Division II Central Section Championship after winning two straight in Division III. It'll be fun to hear from Coach Cranford, his perspective on the game. At the top of hour number two, we got Fowler coach Bill Fever and senior Bubba Smith coming live here to First String Sports. They defeated Tehachapi 10-1 yesterday, and they are advancing to their second straight Central Section Championship game. They lost last year at Kingsburg. That is going to be in D3. At the bottom of hour number two, friend of the show, he comes on every year, finally found a week that he's available, Boston Red Sox scout Josh Lamandera is coming on, talking about some of the kids in the Central Section, what he sees from them. He drops a lot of truth bombs, right? He's seen a lot of baseball up and down the state. He's a lifer, he's a gamer. He is a former Fresno State superstar drafted by the Montreal Expos. Yep, Montreal Expos made it to the bigs as well. So always great to catch up with Josh and see and just talk baseball, talk about the kids and what he likes to see, what he's looking for when he's scouting players as well. All right, so I teased all the crazy stuff that went on yesterday. Two games in particular. Let's go ahead and start with a couple shockers. Buchanan, the top seed in Division I, they fell yesterday to St. Joseph, the 5 seed from Santa Maria. That is an upset. They found themselves down 6-1, couldn't recover. Final ended up being 6-3. St. Joseph, right? They played a few games here in Central Section, lost to Clovis East. Yeah, it's tough to gauge some of these coastal schools and how good they're going to compete at the, especially at the D1 level. Well, they came into Clovis and beat Buchanan, who I'll be honest, I was shocked by that score. Absolutely shocked. They have a sophomore pitcher named Mason Majowski, pitched 6 2/3 innings, and he was tough. Buchanan actually got, what, I think I saw 8 hits in the game, had plenty of opportunities, but was only able to scratch across 3 runs, got one in the bottom of the 7th inning. That was shocking to me. I was following as close as I could on Twitter. I saw that they were down. I was like, oh my gosh, they're going to have to come back again, because in round one against Liberty, they had to score 5 runs late in the game to tie it, and then they eventually won it in extra. So Central Section Division One is not going to see a Clovis Unified team, because Clovis North lost. Centennial, the 6th seed, came into Clovis and took care of the 2 seed. Centennial comes away, the 7-6 win in 10 innings. Earlier on Wednesday, they beat Bullard. And remember the magic that they had in 2023 when they won the D1 title. Beat Bullard in that run too, and then beat Buchanan in that wild game in Visalia where they hit a 3-run homer in the top of the 7th. So Coach Durham, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, he's found the secret sauce, man. And I knew that was going to be a tough game for Clovis North. However, the game, it wasn't without controversy. Again, I was following the game online through some Twitters from Andy Bogard. And Centennial jumped out to a 5-1 lead. I think at one point, both Buchanan and Clovis North are down like 6-1, 5-1. I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's going to happen. We're going to have a St. Joe's and Centennial matchup. But Broncos came back to take a 6-5 lead. But in the 7th, they got a home run from a dude named Jaden Hernandez. Fouled off like 4 2-strike pitches. Went to right center. Goes extra innings. However, at the bottom of the 9th, this is when one of the controversies happened. I heard about it, and then finally the video was sent to me. Runner on 2nd, base hit up the middle, line drive, like a couple hops. Center fielder, he's a lefty, came up throwing and chugging around 2nd base for the winning run. And it, according to the video, looks like he was clearly across the plate and was called out. Go to my Twitter account at Paul Metters and check it out. And the throw didn't beat him. Didn't even beat the runner. Like, sometimes you think, well, the throw beat him, but he slid around the tag and all that stuff. But that wasn't the case. Looked like the runner from the 2 angles. I saw 2 different angles that I saw, like, sprawled across the plate, and it was a swipe tag. And looking at it again this morning, it didn't even look like there was a tag applied. Runner was called out. Umpire was not in great position. He was not on top of the call either. Probably 3 feet, maybe even a little bit more, 4 feet behind home plate. And if you see the video, Clovis North players were halfway to mobbing the base runner that slid home, because they thought for sure that he was going to be called safe. The umpire called him out. Centennial scores a run in the top of the 7th, and they win. They're going to be playing St. Joe's on Saturday. What a heartbreaking way to lose, right? I know bad calls happen, right? It happens everywhere in every sport. Heck, I've talked about that on the show. Seen many videos, but that one was tough. I'd like to see a different angle to see maybe what the umpire saw a little bit better than I did, or the other people did. But congrats to Centennial, right? And call stands, obviously, but it's tough. It's tough for anybody in that situation, especially for the seniors of Clovis North and for that great coaching staff over there. All right, so Kingsburg and Washington Union is the game that I was able to check out. Highly, highly anticipated, highly billed pitching matchup between Trey Morris, Washington Union, headed Oregon State, a draftable kid, lefty, like 0.22 ERA coming to this one, striking out about 2 batters a game. Just crazy, crazy stats. Just a dominating season from Trey Morris against Jensen Hirschkorn, 6'7", just a freak athlete. He's only a junior, so he's got one more year. And Jensen's been brought along slowly this year, pitching-wise. Right? Didn't have great results at the beginning of the year, but he's been clicking. The round one, he struck out 16, went a full 7 innings, a little over 100 pitches. So huge billing, just a huge crowd. People are standing up on the football bleachers looking down. We knew that every run would matter, or every base runner, every pitch for that matter. And sure enough, Kingsburg gets 3 straight hits, and I think it was the 4th inning. Got a sacrifice fly, so they had a 1-0 lead. So we're heading to the top of the 7th inning. Jensen's at 105 pitches, so they pull him. They bring in a freshman pitcher named JT Sanchez. So the kid was ready. The kid was ready, came in. But obviously he's not Jensen Hirschhorn. He just throws like 90, 90, 92. And Washington Union had chances. Got to runners on first and second with one out. And I'm down the third baseline, kind of in the bullpen area. Single to left field on a couple bounces. Throw home, cut off by the third baseman. The catcher's kind of out of position. I think he anticipated that the throw was going to go over his head. So he kind of was going towards Kingsburg's dugout. So a little bit to his left of the plate. Then the throw is kind of online. It's right there. Catcher comes back, catches the baseball. Washington Union runner slides home. It's kind of a backhanded tag. From my angle, looks safe. Looked like he beat the throw and made it across the plate. Obviously, I'm not in a great spot to see it. Umpire, boom, rings him up. Out. Union dugout goes ballistic, goes nuts. Coach Fox comes out arguing, eventually gets kicked out of the game. But it's like, oh, my gosh, how did he call him out? How in the world? My replay, we looked right back at it. Again, I'm whatever, 70, 80 feet away from it. I don't have a great angle on my shot. I mean, looks safe. It's like how at least he's, you know, did he slide, you know, away from the plate? Did he try to tag it with his hand? You know, he slid feet first. And that's always tough. You slide head first sometimes, kind of angle it. You could swipe your hand across home plate. And I saw another angle. He looked safe. And then I saw a still picture. Kind of changed my mind a bit. And then a ground level video where I'm like, maybe he did. But there's tons of dust. It was just hard to see. And it would have tied the game. The game wouldn't have been over. It would have tied it. Kingsburg would have had a chance. Or the inning would have continued, right? That made it a second out. But, tough pill for Washington Union. But Kingsburg advances. Gabe Camarillo, after the break, we're going to talk about that play and what he saw, because he had a couple different videos sent to him as well. So, anyway, I mean, right, couple bang-bang plays at home plate. Well, one. Clovis North, to me, it wasn't bang-bang. But, I mean, tough job by the umpires. They got to make calls right away. They could be dramatic and all that, right? That's kind of what home plate umpires do in those types of plays. But, right? Thrill of victory and agony of defeat. Well, I knew I'd spend a lot of time talking about those games and those plays, but there's one more thing I want to mention about that game before we move on and set up the other championship games. Trey Morris, who pitched a heck of a game, complete game. He struck out 7 in those 6 innings that he pitched. He was actually left at second base, kind of coming around third on the final out. It was a line drive to center field. I thought it was going to fall. So Trey was kind of coming around third. Catch was made. Kingsbury's celebrating. All right, they're running on the field. They're not celebrating, an enormous celebration. But I watched Trey, and he just walked off the field. Wasn't mad. Wasn't angry. Couple Kingsburg coaches went up and shook his hand. He looked them in the eye and shook their hands and walked off the field. I thought that was cool, right? So here's a senior who's been waiting for this moment, this game, his entire life. And he respects the game, respect the opponent. So that was just a really cool. So hats off to Trey. He's been on the show a few times. Just a really good kid. Wish him luck at Oregon State. All right, so I spent a lot of time on that. Let's talk about some of these other scores and matchups that are going to be happening in Visalia starting next Wednesday. So Wednesday at 6 o'clock, D4, Lemoore is going to be taking on Wasco. Thursday, D3 at 6 o'clock, Fowler. We're going to talk with Bill Fever and Bubba Smith at 11 o'clock. They're either going to play number 15, Hoover, or Morro Bay. They're the 3 seed. They're playing today. Hoover had their grad night yesterday, so Morro Bay was kind enough to play today. And I have a feeling Logan Cunningham's going to be pitching for Hoover, so that's going to be a tough matchup. Morro Bay's 25-5 on this season, so they're no slouch either. Friday, we got the two games. D6 is at 4. That's going to be Torres and Mendota. And then the D2 game, 7:30, Kingsburg and Ridgeview. And the Saturday, the D5 game at 12 at noon, Corcoran, the 4 seed, and number 2, Shafter. And then the D1 game at 6, so there's no 3 o'clock game Saturday. It's going to be St. Joseph and Centennial. Let me go over the softball matchups as well. Those are going to be at Margie Wright Diamond at Fresno State. 2 games a day for 3 days. On Thursday, D6 at 4:30. It's going to be Roosevelt. What a great story for the 10 seed Roosevelt. They're going to be playing Torres. After that, we got Liberty Madera and Pioneer Valley. On Friday, the first game is going to be Dos Palos and Orcutt Academy. And then the D2 game, Bakersfield Christian and Menachi. And then Saturday, D4 at 4:30, Kalinga, number 1 Woodlake. That's going to be a good game. And then the big one, the final game, the D1 matchup. That's going to be Cannon, the 5 seed, who came back to defeat Central 4-3 earlier this week, and defending champ Clovis North. That's going to be a really good softball game. All right, we're going to take a small break here. We're going to talk to Gabe Camarillo about Clovis North, Buchanan falling in the playoffs, and a little bit more about that Kingsburg game and Washington Union. Interesting stuff going on there. All right, so thank you guys for listening. This is the Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. All right. Interesting choice of music. Gabe Camarillo. All right, Jorge. Good job by you. All right. In my haste to talk about some of those crazy, wild, and wacky, controversial things that went on yesterday in the playoffs, I got to give a couple shout-outs to boys volleyball. Clovis East won the D1 Central Section title, defeating Buchanan. Both those teams are still alive, man. They're playing in regional finals. So congrats to both of those volleyball teams. State swim meet was a couple weekends ago. Clovis West boys took second overall. Congrats to them. They got a couple golds in the 200 and 400 freestyle relay team. So, yeah, good stuff from them. And then the Masters meet is going on, track and field Masters and state championships next week as well. All right, so Gabe, bringing you in on short notice. Thanks again, my friend. So, first of all, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm always able and willing to talk to you, Paul, about anything, especially the games that we saw yesterday, and almost identical plays at the plate that both affected games in a huge way.
All right, so yeah, I definitely want to get to those in just a second. But what I would have bet good money that either Buchanan or Clovis North was going to make the championship game, but St. Joe's and Centennial certainly earn those victories, right? And they're going to be playing for a D1 championship. But what were you surprised as I was? I mean, you were probably following as much as possible online, but were you surprised when both those teams, the top 2 seeds, especially at home, lost?
I was surprised that St. Joseph went up by as much as they did. I think they were up 6-2 early, and according to Buchanan's Twitter account, there were maybe some errors, some defensive miscues by the Bears, but when I saw that score, I had a feeling St. Joseph had a good shot to win because their pitcher, their senior ace, Nico Pinedo, has been their guy for like 4 years. Since a freshman, he's been on that varsity team. And you know, St. Joseph has slowly climbed the ladder. They went far in the playoffs last year. They beat Clovis East last year in a wild extra innings affair down on the coast in the playoffs. And so, you know, when they beat Clovis East last year, I had a feeling that they were probably, you know, not scared of a track team. And their road to Buchanan, they face Frontier at home. They face Redwood at home. Redwood was the 13th seed, right? So I didn't think, based off those two games, that Buchanan should be worried. But, I mean, that pitcher, when you have your number one arm, that can go 3 times in a postseason. St. Joseph has a really good number one. I guess that's what can happen. The St. Joseph team that doesn't have the pitching depth but has a really top-end arm can advance through the playoffs.
and then Clovis North. All right, so let's talk about that game. Clovis North actually stormed back and took a 6-5 lead, and then that Centennial Magic showed up again a couple years ago in Visalia. I got a home run to tie the game, and then following on Twitter, what's going on? Clovis North is, I heard there was a controversial call, and I hadn't seen a video until I got home. What did you think about that home plate call in that Clovis North game? I'm sure you saw the video of it. What it looks like is the player sliding across home plate and then that sweep tag coming late.
Well, I couldn't see home plate because there's so much dirt in that circle. It's really hard to see the little white sliver that's home plate. So first of all, that's my first impression. And the umpire is standing right there, and I've seen some comments on social media about was the umpire positioned correctly to make that call. And I do wonder when they train these umpires, you know, what do they tell them about plays at the plate? Where should they stand? You know, what should they look for? In this instance, I think the umpire was probably looking at the tag coming down, and he looked down, and he didn't see home plate, so he wasn't sure if the runner touched home. It is very, very close bang-bang play at the plate. On the first watch, I thought he was safe. But on the second watch, it's really tough to tell because I don't know where home plate's at. And the video that I saw, there's a logo on the bottom right corner that's kind of blocking where home plate would be. So maybe that's where it was, but I couldn't tell because of the logo. I don't know. It's really hard to tell. If there's a tie, do you give it to the runner and call him safe, or do you give it to the catcher and call him out?
Yeah, usually in those types of plays, right? I mean, the bang-bang play, if it's bang-bang, all the excitement and adrenaline that goes into that. You know, Clovis North, they were ready to go out there and dogpile, their teammates and celebrate a victory. They were halfway there. But, I'm glad that you saw that second angle. Centennial made a good throw. They came up throwing, right? The throw was there, but, it's just a tough call all the way around. So St. Joseph and Centennial.
If they called him safe, then Centennial has a good argument like, oh, we got hosed because our throw was on time. The tag was applied. We don't know where home plate was at because there's so much dirt. Centennial would be the ones crying foul if it was the other way around. So like you said, really good point there by you. It's not fun either way for the umpire.
Yes.
I mean, it's like a losing situation for the umpire because that's how close of a play it was. I totally understand where North comes from, though. But I always tell people, right, if there's a controversial call at the end of the game, don't let it get to that part. You know, North had a 6-5 lead going into the top of the seventh, and Jaden Hernandez hit a bomb that tied the game and sent it to extra innings, and it went all the way to the 10th. North had a chance to win it bottom of the seventh, the bottom of the eighth. And then that bottom of the ninth that we're talking about, that's where the big play happened. And, you don't let it get to that point if you're Clovis North.
Yeah, and Clovis North, they did have plenty of opportunities, in that game to win it, put some runs up on the board, and obviously to stop the bleeding, so to speak, when Centennial went up to that big lead. All right, so speaking of not being able to see home plate very well, same thing game with that Kingsburg and Washington Union situation. You were there, so you saw it with your own eyeballs. You recorded it as well. I'm sure you've seen all the different angles, as I have. I've talked to plenty of people. Just first of all, the setup, Gabe. Let's talk about that first before we get into some of the action. But you made mention too on Twitter just how many people were there, just the amount of spectators, the atmosphere, right? I mean, you've been to Kingsburg to that baseball field a few times, I believe, but man, that place was absolutely packed. People down the lines. Just talk about what you saw there as far as fans.
Yeah, well, when I walked up, it was an hour late because I had a previous story that I was working on in Fresno. But as soon as my story was done there, I come down to Kingsburg because that's the game of the day for me. And it was packed, as you said. It was also a very fast game. Like, when I got there, it was already approaching the sixth inning, and it was only an hour after first pitch because, of course, when you have two horses on the mound, two future Division I pitchers, you're going to have a very fast game and a 1-0 game. And this one was for Kingsburg in front. And Hirschhorn, he pitched well. I saw his pitch count was pretty up there. Walked some batters, but got 10 strikeouts. Trey Morris only allowed one run. I'm not quite sure how that run was scored. You could probably fill me in on that.
Yeah, it was a sacrifice fly.
sacrifice. And, of course, it's not even a hit that scores a run with these two pitchers. It's a out that scores a run. That's how good these guys are, man. And I wasn't surprised to see Morris go into the sixth and shut him down in the sixth and get rid of some traffic on the base path thanks to a bang-bang double play by the catcher, a strike him out, throw him out. So that set up the seventh, as we're talking about. And leadoff runner gets on, infield single. Next batter, Trey Morris, draws a walk. I was kind of wondering, would we see Morris play hero again and hit a two-run go-ahead home run off the closer? But, you know, he gets four balls. He takes his base. So that sets up two on, one out. And Cole Ross, who the round before hit a grand slam to beat his quarterfinal opponent and send the Panthers to the semis against Kingsburg, it would have been a picturesque ending for Washington Union if this batter, who's already been a playoff hero, ties the game. But a heck of a throw in left field. I think that kind of gets lost in this whole thing. I wish I knew the Kingsburg left fielder's name. You probably know it. But he threw a dime of a ball. And it wasn't all the way to home plate. It had to be relayed by the third baseman. But it was a really good throw that made this a close play at the plate. And I had the view from the press box. So there is a pole. There's lots of poles that are kind of blocking your view of the field because it's a metal gate. And I see the catcher catch it high over his head, and as he was catching it, the runner was barreling towards home plate, not even thinking about a catcher, and just slid right into him. So if I remember correctly, I'm not looking at the video, I think the catcher back was facing the base runner coming in at home plate. So it was kind of an awkward position to start. And then because the catcher isn't even facing the runner, he just instinctively with his left hand, as he's catching the ball, brings it down and tags the knee of the Kings of the Washington Union base runner. Now, the Kingsburg catcher, did he tag that left knee before the right foot, which is clearly visible on video? You can see home plate. When that right foot touches home, does the left knee get tagged in time for the out number two? Apparently, the umpire thought so because he called it out, and that led to a firestorm on social media, a bunch of angry Washington Union fans there at the stadium. It was a chaotic scene for about a minute. And then, Washington Union had to compose themselves and a hard-hit ball to center field end of their season.
Yeah, you described it, perfectly, Gabe. And, the relay, right? And I'm down the third baseline, kind of in the dugout, and you could hear the coaching staff, right, come up throwing. And if the left fielder, if he has to move a little bit to his right, a little bit to his left, that's going to be a harder throw. Maybe take, a half a second, which, half a second definitely comes into play in a play like this. That's going to be a more difficult throw. But it was a two-hopper right to him, charged it pretty well. And, the catcher situation was interesting to me, Gabe, because the relay, like you said, was on point. And I think he thought, the catcher, that the throw was going to go over the third baseman's head because he kind of comes up the line a little bit and then he retreats. And that's why it was just an awkward play at home. It's not like he was sitting at home, had 1 foot behind the plate and 1 foot, to the side and was able to catch the ball, try to catch the ball and do a sweep tag. It wasn't like that at all. It was more of a backhanded play. But, like you said, Gabe, it's, a bang-bang play. It didn't go Washington Union's way. It was very chaotic, and then, Washington Union still had a chance. Again, that was only going to tie the game. They weren't going to take the lead on that. But, Gabe, you've been doing this for a while now in the high school sports scene and a lot now with college, with Fresno State. But, hey, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, I mean, sports can absolutely rip your heart out at times, or the thrill of victory is just sweet. It's just a sweet moment for teams. But, man, what an incredible baseball game.
And, since you mentioned it, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, the second straight day I saw that because the day before I was at Central High School. Central was a strike away from going to their fourth straight softball Valley Championship, and they had their ace on the mound. You would want nobody else in that circle but Kaya Galavis, and Buchanan just found a way to rally. They got a game-tying walk on a full count. I mean, I don't know what the Buchanan batter was thinking. I think her name was Taimir Bracamontes. What was she thinking on the 3-2 count with the bases loaded down a run? Like, this is your dream, and you take a ball and walk, like you could have easily swung at that and missed, but she was really good at the plate. And then, Addie Schaefer, this freshman, hits a two-run single to give Buchanan a win. So, yeah, I saw tears on Central side and Buchanan just in pure elation. And then the next day I see the same thing with Washington Union and Kingsburg. That, in its own twisted way, is what makes the playoffs fun to watch because the stakes are so high and both teams are laying it all on the line. The passion is there. The want to is there. These kids are not pro ball players like Juan Soto, just looking at balls pass by him and striking out on three pitches. You know, they're not half butting it. I could use a different word. They're not half efforting it. They are truly giving it their 100%. And you see that in the playoffs. That's why I love covering and watching playoff high school sports in any aspect, baseball, basketball, football, because of games like we saw yesterday. Yes, the outcome is going to make half the fan base that watches that game upset. And it's going to make the other half of the fan base feel a little bit lucky or just feel like, man, we got the breaks that we needed to win a potential championship. It takes breaks to win a championship. We know that. You can't just win it based off pure dominance all the time. Sometimes you need stuff to go your way. So I think this was just one of those situations where North and Washington Union, they might be right. They could be right. But it wasn't what the call was. And in baseball, missed calls happen all the time. Ask Armando Galarraga that. Ask any baseball player that. They know missed calls are just part of the game. You move on and you find a way to redeem yourself in the future.
Absolutely. Good stuff, Gabe. All right. Thanks for jumping on a short notice, giving your perspective. Always appreciate you coming on and good discussions as always. Have a great rest of the weekend, my friend.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
All right. We're going to talk with Kingsburg coach Jim Cranford about that game that we've been talking about. But from his perspective, we're going to get his ideas. They're playing for another Central Section championship, this one in D2. You're listening to it on the Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. Welcome back. Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports. A lot of baseball talk. Well, lots of crazy, wild, fun, controversial, all those different adjectives you can use for playoffs. Right? Talk about the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. Well, we got a coach right now, Kingsburg head coach Jim Cranford. His Vikings are playing in another Central Section championship game next Friday after winning two straight. And I was at this game last night, a 1-0 win against Washington Union. Lots of talk about it. But first of all, Coach Cranford, thanks for coming on this morning. How you doing?
Good, Paul. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about the preparation, getting these kids ready. You played on Wednesday in a tight 4-3 win. And, right, you got just one day in between. And you're going to have to face a pitcher, Trey Morris, and everybody knows how good Trey is, a Division I pitcher. Just kind of what was the preparation? How did you prep your team for playing Washington Union and going against him?
We just tried to put a little more velo in batting practice, but you really can't duplicate Trey. He's pretty darn good, you know what I mean? So I was just kind of hoping he didn't throw a lot of off-speed stuff because we didn't work on that very much. We worked on trying to be on time with the fastball. Really wanted to put the ball in play more than anything else. So, you know, he's tough.
And on your side, you had a pretty good pitcher yourself and Jensen Hirschhorn, 6'7", been clocked as high as 94 miles per hour this year. You guys have taken great care of him all season as far as limiting his innings and right, watching his pitch count. I think he threw over 100 pitches in round one. What were your expectations, you and your staff's expectations, for him going into the game? And, I mean, how great was he? How great was his performance?
Jensen competes every time he goes out. You know, we just kind of talk to him every inning, make sure he's good, and you know, he felt good. He got in some trouble early, and he pitched out of a couple innings, and, you know, kind of got his pitch count up. But, you know, he takes the ball and he gets after it. You know, he's a competitor.
But,
he's being clocked at 97.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what do you think was, like, some of his some of his great pitches that he made, some great moments. I knew he struck out a batter with the bases loaded. I believe that was in the fifth inning. I could be wrong on that. But is there one specific moment that stands out to you about his performance?
Well, I think when he got Trey in the sixth or in the fifth, when they had runners on first and second, and it got to a 3-2 count, and he got him with a backdoor slider. And I think that was one of the biggest strikeouts of the game. And he did the same thing in the first. They had runners on first and second. He pitched out of that with a couple back-to-back strikeouts. So, I mean, he's kind of, you know, he's kind of done it his whole career. So, I mean, he reaches back when he has to and gets after it.
And I talked to your pitching coach, Coach Wood, a little bit before the game. And you guys, as a coaching staff, you don't call pitches. Maybe you give some suggestions every once in a while. You trust your pitcher and catcher to make those calls. Is that something that you've done for a while, or just with some specific pitchers that you trust, or is that just kind of how you guys roll?
We just let our catchers go. You know, I mean, we're pretty old school in Kingsburg. You know, we don't pitch bombs. We don't do a lot of signs. The game's slow enough as it is, so. We let our catchers, we'll go over, you know, if they have charts on people, we'll go over how we want to work certain people. And but, you know, I mean, I call a pitch from the side, the kid hangs a curveball. Is it my fault or is it the kid's fault? You know, I mean, I don't know what's working that day, and the catcher's there. So, you know, like I said, we're pretty old school. We let our catchers do their thing, and, you know, pitchers can shake. I mean, we obviously got two veteran guys on the team with Jensen and Gavin, so they pretty much call their own game.
All right, so let's go to the seventh inning now. Jensen's at 105 pitches. You got a couple options that are throwing there in the bullpen. You went with a freshman with a chance to go to the Central Section Championship game on the line. Just talk about that decision and how you trust a freshman in that situation.
JT's had quality starts all year. I mean, you know, if you go back 2 weeks ago, we're playing Sierra Pacific, and Gavin went, you know, was going on a restricted pitch count, so he went his three innings, and JT came in and threw seven, you know, and he went 12 innings. So, I mean, you know, all the confidence in the world in the kid. I mean, he doesn't act like a freshman. You know, he thinks he belongs there, and he does. So we have no qualms of giving him the ball.
And, all right, so we talked a little bit about this play, the throw, the out at home in the top of the seventh inning for the second out. You and I discussed it a little bit, obviously tough angles and a tough call by the umpire. What did you see exactly from your spot in the dugout about that play? Where were you looking?
Well, you know, I talked to you yesterday about it. I really didn't see it at the plate, because I was worried about the backside runner coming to third. And, you know, kids get caught up in the emotion and all that kind of stuff. I was just trying to get our kids dialed in to make sure third base was covered up. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Vaughn put the tag on. It was really awkward. And I didn't even see the outer safe call. I was worried about Trey coming to third base, because if he was safe, then we're going to have a winning run on third base, and I didn't want him there. So, you know, I didn't really get a good view. I saw a lot of the video and stuff, and, you know, I mean, the ball beat him there, and it was, you know, I think Vaughn, like Gabe said, kind of came off because he thought the throw was offline, and then just to reappear at the plate. You know, Dylan Darling made a good feed, Blake Burgess made hit the cutoff, and that was a boom boom play. You know, it's a 50-50 deal, and it just happened to go our way.
All right, so you guys are in the championship game. Just kind of just walk us through this team and the journey that you've had with these guys. If I told you at the beginning of the year, I know you got a couple horses this year, but if I told you at the beginning of the year you guys would be in the D2 championship game, what would you have said?
I don't know if that would have been possible at that point. You know, our first game of the year, we played a good Madera team, and we ended up losing 12-1, and I thought it was – probably one of our better games, as far as when you walk 11 guys and hit six, you only give up 12 runs. That's pretty good. But, you know, this group was young, good senior leadership, and they just kind of got better and better. They're pluggers. They just work hard. They go about their business. They don't worry about other people. They do what they're told. I mean, they just work. And that's kind of why they're where they're at. And, you know, if you'd have told me in you know, January, oh, yeah, you know, you're going to be in the Valley, but you're not going to have your starting two pitchers until the last 3 weeks of the season, I really would have said, oh, I don't think so. So, you know, at the beginning of the year, I was just kind of hoping we'd get 10 wins in so we could get to the playoffs. And then it kind of snowballed a little bit. The kids start playing better, and our young guys kind of grew up a little bit. So it's just it really has been a team type thing, you know. I mean, one guy has a bad day, the next guy picks him up, and the kids get along, they have fun, they do things together, they like their company, you know. So it's a fun group to be around, that aspect of it.
Talking with Jim Cranford, the head baseball coach at Kingsburg High School. All right, so you mentioned Gavin and Jensen not really becoming healthy except for the last 3 weeks. Just kind of talk about Gavin a little bit and his journey through the season and how he's come along. You know, he's a Fresno State commit, and, you know, he pitched that incredible game last year in the championship game. So talk about him a little bit and what he brings to the team.
You know, Gav, when you give the ball, he's going to go as far as he can. He has command of really four pitches, you know, when he's right. I don't know if you didn't see we played Kermit at the end of the year, and he threw 80 pitches, 65 strikes, and 13 strikeouts, and his performance was probably better than it was the year before in the Valley Championship. So, you know, and then against Paso, he didn't have as good stuff, but he competed, kept us in the ball game, pitched out of a lot of innings early. He never had an easy inning. And it just shows, you know, his maturity. And he didn't have his good stuff, and he got us, you know, six innings. And we had an opportunity to win the game because of him. So, you know, he's those two kids, Jensen and Gavin, are stallions. You know, I mean, when they get on the mound, it's their domain. They're going to control it. They're going to get after people.
And I know a town like Kingsburg and, you know, the small towns that I love, the Selmas and the Fowlers. Are going to talk to Coach Fever and Bubba Smith in just a minute here. You know, there's something to be said about two-sport athletes or even three-sport athletes. You know, kids that play football and baseball, that's the usual combo because you try to rest during the winter times, but sometimes that doesn't work out. But you got a lot of football dudes on your baseball team. How do you think that helps helps your team when kids are able to play multiple sports?
I love it when the kids play multiple sports. Football gives kids an edge. You have to compete every minute that you're on the football field. There's no time off. You got to be able to, you know, make adjustments on the run. It's team building. It's bonding. You know, I think football is great. You know, we really don't do like a winter league because we'll probably have about 10 or 12 kids who don't play any fall sport or winter sport, and the rest of the kids are playing football, basketball, water polo, some run cross country, whatever the situation. And then when that fall sport's over, we'll go from 10 kids to 50 or 60 kids, and we'll start our program usually end of November, you know, we go through December and into the season. But I just think it's great for kids, you know, play multiple sports. I have a good relationship with the other coaches, Dave Wilson and Phil Bergstrom. And, you know, we support each other. We support their programs.
Got a couple minutes here with you, Coach. All right, so are the files sealed? Who are you going to throw in the championship game against Redwood, or can you tip your hand a little bit? Is it a secret?
No, we just go next guy up. It's Gavin's start. So, you know, he'll be on the mound. So, and then Jensen will be ready to go. And Travis Clifton, Kyle Garcia, Nick Lindgren, JT, whoever's available, you know, we'll have a full complement of arms. So we'll let Gavin go. And like I said, we don't alternate. It was his start Wednesday. It was Jensen's yesterday. And it's going to be Gavin's on Friday. So, I mean, that's just, you know, I mean, I like our chances with either guy on the mound or any of our kids on the mound.
I agree, Coach. It's going to be a great game. It's been fun following your team. One last thing here. We got another minute with you. What would it mean for the town of Kingsburg to win a third straight Central Section championship?
I think it'd be really special. We would do something that really has never been done in the baseball program. I mean, we have a great tradition in a lot of sports, but we're kind of a football town. You know, you walk around, there's a lot of section championships in football. you know, baseball's trying to keep up, and I think it kind of puts us on the map, you know. I mean, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, times were rough, and we've gotten better. We have a lot of good kids going through the program. They're excited about baseball. Our JV team is very good. There's some younger levels that are really good coming up, and I just kind of think, you know, maybe Kingsburg baseball's here to stay for now.
I agree. Everybody knows about Kingsburg baseball. You do a fantastic job, you and your staff. Always appreciate you taking the time to talk about baseball and the program. And good luck, Coach. Really appreciate you.
Thanks, Paul. I'd just like to thank my staff and, you know, admin, everybody, for what they're doing. You know, they really work hard for us. I appreciate everything you do. I appreciate what you do for sports in the Valley. I mean, You just do an awesome job. I really appreciate you.
All right. Thanks, Coach. I appreciate you as well. All right. We'll take a break here, and we got Fowler Baseball in the house as well. Excited to talk to them. You're listening to it all on 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. That's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome to hour number two of the Central Valley Sports Report. You're listening to it on 1430 ESPN, your local sports leader. I'm your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports. Definitely the place to be. Saturdays are usually hopping here. People are getting their Letterman's jackets fitted and put the patches on however they want. If they want to put a Bible verse on, you have all those options. They'll definitely walk you through all the different scenarios you can have with your Letterman's jacket. I know I got Fowler in the house, and I know that rich tradition in Fowler's. Coach Bill Fever and Bubba Smith are here. They're 27-3. They're going to play in the D3 title game after defeating Tehachapi yesterday 10-1, and they're going to be playing the winner of Hoover and Morro Bay. I think one of you guys, I think Bubba might be driving down there and check it out in person. But Bill, do you got your Letterman's jacket? You still have it?
I do. I still have it. That's hanging in the closet at home.
What's it look like? You got a bunch of patches on it? Does it say Bill on it? What's it look like?
Back in the old days, you didn't put all that stuff on there. You just put your championship patches on there. I got two Valley championship patches on there and just my letter and a couple emblems. That's what we did back. I mean,
no big name on the back, right? No. We didn't have that back in the day.
No, me either. Too old for that.
Does it still fit though? That's the money question.
Unfortunately, no, that doesn't fit.
Bubba, you got yours?
It would be a schmedium.
You got to bust that out, man. You got to show it off one of these days to your team. Bubba, you got a Letterman's jacket yet?
I do have mine.
And you bought it? You got it here, right?
Yeah,
you had to.
I did get it here. I think like 2 years ago.
Yeah? Awesome. Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, so a lot of fun stuff to talk about. First of all, thank you guys for driving here up to Fresno and to talk about your team and the season so far. All right, so yesterday's game. I was trying to check, you know, Twitter as much as possible, and I finally refreshed Max Preps when I got home and saw the 10-1. I wasn't really surprised because you guys have had an excellent season so far. Things seem to be clicking. So, Coach, let's start with you. Just kind of what were you expecting in that game? We talked a little bit last night. You said, hey, we're just firing on all cylinders. It was a complete baseball game yesterday.
It really was, and like I say, I'm concerned about every game because, you know, it's just you never know what you're going to get. Tehachapi has a you know, long tradition of good baseball. I've heard good things about them. I knew they could swing it, and so obviously it was a concern. They came out and took this really good in and out. I'm like, wow, these guys are the real deal, and then we just got rolling. We came out swinging it, and like I say, we played really well in all phases, and when we're firing on all cylinders, we're a good team.
Who was on the mound for you? Who threw?
We had Morellis on the mound, and like I say, I knew he was going to do well. He's done well all year. What we did different this year compared to last year, we threw a couple guys. We threw Morellis. We threw Cade Monis. We threw them in big games early to get them battle tested. Because we always know what we're going to get with Bubba. He's gonna come out and deal every game. And we need to make sure other guys are ready for that moment, and that's what we did. That's why I had full confidence in Yaya to get up there and do what he did.
Offensive-wise, how'd you guys roll? You had a couple big hits. I heard the guy to your left got, you know, put one over the fence.
He did. He hit a bomb, and I tell you, the wind was blowing, and I thought, man, nobody's hitting one out today. And sure as heck, the first inning, he hits a two-run homer to get us going. And just that really set the tone. And from there, we hit consistently. We hit through the lineup. We had some hard outs. So we were swinging it well. But I was just pleased with all aspects of the game. We pitched well. We played good defense. We ran bases well. We played a complete game. And so that really, like I say, if you would have told me, hey, we're going to beat them 10-1, I would have said, I don't think so. That team's good, you know. But we played really well.
All right, so, Bubba, let's talk about that. All right, so first inning, are you hitting third? You're hitting third in the lineup?
Yeah, I'm hitting third.
You're hitting third?
Yeah.
All right, so who gets on before you?
So Matthew, I think he lined out right field. And then Cade came up, 0-2 count. I think he put a ball into to right field, mm-hmm. a single. So he got on, and then I came up, threw a nasty slider, got me, and then he threw me a fastball. I fought it off, and then it was an 0-2 count, so I choked up, just tried to put a ball in play, and he just threw one right in my zone, and I took it to left field, and it was gone.
On an 0-2 pitch?
Yeah, on an 0-2 pitch.
And they tried to sneak a fastball, or you used something off speed?
No, they tried to sneak a fastball high, and I made him pay for it.
All right, that's awesome. All right, so, yeah, Coach mentioned you didn't think anybody was going to be able to hit one out. Like, did you know it right away? Did you like, man, I think I got it up enough. What was going through your mind?
I hit that ball, and honestly, I knew it right away. I watched it. It was a matter if it was fair or foul because it was kind of leading to the left side because of the wind. So I kind of sat there and just kind of glanced at it, see what was going to happen, and it was fair ball. So
what do you think that does for your team, right? When you get a big hit like that early, when you put some runs up in the first inning, like as far as momentum and settling down your pitcher. I know you're a pitcher too. We're going to get into that in just a second. But like, what do you think it did for that team in that playoff game?
I think it set the tone early. Our pitcher, our sophomore, we had to back him up early, make his job easy on the mound. He's been dealing all year. He's been doing his job. Probably one of the best pitchers in the whole section as a sophomore. We just had to back him up, and I came up to plate, and I did my job, set the tone early, came in that dugout, and we were just swarming. And from there, it just took off.
So how many home runs this year now for
I've
you?
I've only had two.
That's two. Where was your other one at?
My other one was against Fresno Christian at home.
Was that home?
Yeah.
Left field?
Yeah, left field.
All right. So, Coach, let's go back to Wednesday's game. It's 4-1 game against Menachi. Now, talk about swinging the bats, right? Just kind of look at their scores. They've been like 17 runs, I think, one game and like 20-something, you know, within the last couple of weeks. Just kind of walk us through that game and the mentality that you guys had and you went with Bubba on the mound.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got to go with your number one in that situation. You know, you got to win to get to the next game. And obviously, you know, Menachi is a good program, well-coached. They've been winning. So – you know, it was a no-brainer to us. That's just how we roll. We're gonna go with your number one and have your other guys ready. And the goal was, I mean, really, the honest goal was to get him to 50, take him out, and then go to Morelos and then keep him. You know, just whatever the score was, get him a little work, get him a pen in, and get him ready for Friday or turn Bub around. So we were prepared for all of that. But when he got to 50, it was a close ball game. And he just said, hey, I need to keep rolling. And so I said, yeah, we got to keep rolling. We got to win this game. And I knew things weren't going our way early, you know. It just they got a couple balls flared in and scored. And we hit some hard outs and, you know, we stranded runners. And I thought, man, we're in a tough ball game, so we got to ride Bubba the whole way. And he threw a great game. I think he threw a two-hitter, but – you know, it was a close ball game. We were concerned, so we kept rolling with him, and he just dealt that game. He was so good. We could throw any of four pitches at any moment, and really just kept him off balance.
So was that kind of your mentality, Bubba? Like Coach mentioned, maybe 50 pitches and see where we're at in the game. Like what were you thinking of the game? Like, hey, you know, Coach is going to have to take that ball away from me. Was that kind of your mentality?
I wasn't even thinking about that. I was just coming in the game trying to play my part. I knew my defense was going to do some work behind me, so – but we're really like we've been starting off hot every game, so we really didn't have that start this game. So I was kind of timid, but after I was over that 50 pitch limit, I told Coach Fever just keep me in, let me keep rolling, And then actually the next inning we put up a three spot and it was 4-1 the rest of the game, and we just handled business from there.
All right, so what pitches were have been working for you this year, or maybe specifically in that game?
That game, I was my fastball was up to 91, and my curveball was hitting. I think it was hitting like 80, and we were usually just working those two pitches. My changeup was also working, and then my slider, it was a little iffy that game, but it still had, when we had to use it, it got the job done.
So during a game, right, you're trying to feel out what pitch is working best for you. So let's say, like, the slider's not working real well. Are you just like, man, I'm just going to go fastball, fastball? Or you're like, man, I'm going to try to figure this out, keep throwing sliders? What's going through your mind in those situations?
In that situation, that's where I trust my coach, because Coach Fever always calls a great game. And when I'm not working with one pitch, he calls it again, make sure that I get it right. So when a pitch isn't working, I just got to go back to it and make sure it's working.
That kind of how you feel? I say, I was working for Bubba. Maybe let's keep trying this.
Oh, without question. No, I feel like with Bubba, I can call any pitch at any moment. And if I see one that isn't working, it, like, let's, for example, he throws a curveball, misses bad. Maybe it's not a curveball count. I'm going to make him throw it again because we're going to need it later. We're going to need it, And I'm really never fearful. If he gets behind 3-1, that's not a worry to me, because I know he's going to come back and battle. And, within the next two pitches, he's going to get out somehow. So calling a game for him and for Yah, those guys are just – they throw them all for strikes. So I feel like we can call a good game just knowing that they'll throw what we put down.
Well, I'm curious what you like better. Do you like blowing a 90-mile-an-hour past a guy, or do you like making him look a little silly on a slider that's off the plate by about 2 feet?
Honestly, I think it probably shock everyone, but I like throwing that off speed and make them fool just to make it look better. So
yeah. All right, so Coach, let's talk. Obviously, Bubba is a huge part of this team, pitching and with the bat. So it looks like a lot of seniors on your team as well. So who are some other guys that have stepped up for you this year?
Well, with this group, it's a team effort. We hit 1 through 9. It's just, it's not even just the seniors. It's everybody. It's everybody 1 through 9, and they all contribute at different times. That's what makes us a tough team, because it's not like, there are a lot of teams, maybe your top five hit and the other guys you kind of get by, but no, with this group, they all hit. But if you look at the senior group, I mean, if you look at the senior group, you got, Cade Moniz and Josh Harrow and Jason Lopez and Ryan Martinez and Bubs here. Those five guys have been with us for 4 years, and four of them, when these guys were freshmen, Bubba was pitching, Jason was catching, and Cade was at second, and Josh was at short. So they're playing the toughest positions on the field as freshmen, and we were competing and winning games then. So it's been really exciting to see those guys step up, and Davian Alcaraz is another senior that's come a long way, and he's contributing, hitting the ball well. He's playing a good left field. I got to make sure I didn't miss any other senior starters. I think that's all the senior starters right there. And then, even Adam Carmona is another senior that he's more of our defensive specialist, our pinch runner guy. And he's actually come off the bench and got some hits for us. And that's another guy that's a non-starter that's gets our job done. And Kyle Carley had to fill in when we were waiting on Luna to get back from his injury. And he did an admirable job filling in. He did that last year as well when we had a couple injuries, because we were a little beat up last year. And so just guys doing their role, just filling in the role. And, heck, at this point, I've talked about all the guys starting. I mean, you got Luna out playing right field, and he's a good bat, leadoff guy. Daniel Delgado's playing center. Another young guy that he pitches, hasn't had to pitch for us because we have so many arms, but he's done great defensively. So, I mean, we just have a solid group. And when we're all playing our game, when we're doing what we're supposed
to
do, it's a pretty tough team.
27-3 on the season, going to play for a Central Section title. We don't know who you're playing against yet. We'll find out, about 6 or 7 hours who you're going to see. All right, Bubba, I want to ask you about some of your teammates. You mentioned a lot of you guys were brought up as freshmen, thrown into the fire, so to speak, with baseball. But who are some of the dudes that you've been playing with since, I don't know, what, 8 years old playing travel ball?
So, honestly, almost all of them. The catcher, my catcher, Jason Lopez, he's a dog behind the dish. He catches every ball, makes him go to work. And then even when I'm in my slide step trying to slow it down, I can just throw an off speed. And you see, he has that arm to just still throw that runner out. And then at first base, we got Panda Ryan Martinez. He originally was in right field, and he moved to first. And he's just been like an artifact. He's been good. Really good at first base. It's been a wall. It doesn't let anything get by him. And then at second base, we got Yaya, the sophomore. Really good pitcher. And at shortstop, we got Cade. He can swing it. He can swing it like no other. And then at third, we got Josh. He's long, super long, got a lot of range to him. And he can swing it as well. And then in center field, we got Daniel Delgado. Fulfilled the role of Maddie because Maddie was injured coming off the ACL tear. And he's been doing his thing. He's younger. He's a junior. And then we got Matthew in right. He's super fast. He still has that speed, and he has a cannon. For how little he is, he has a cannon. And he's our leadoff batter. He's always hitting the ball, always getting on base. Once he gets on, it's like an automatic run. And then in left field, we got Davian too. He can swing it too. He hit a home run not too long ago that no one thought was.
One of those where everybody was surprised.
Yeah,
like, what?
Did you just hit it out? It was. But yeah, he got a good arm too. He's a smart fielder too. So
did you get together with your guys before the season? I know you're a football guy and basketball guy as well. Did you guys get together and have some conversation? Man, this is our senior year. We got to go all the way. Do you have any of that type of conversation, or was it more like, hey, we know what we got to do this year?
Our chemistry's been built since the start of freshman year. We've always like bonded together. We've always been together. We eat with each other at lunch. We hang out with each other at break, during school, after school. And then we got practice too, so you know, during the off season we just bonded and just built our chemistry since freshman year, so we've always been there for each other.
So where's the best place to eat though in Fowler? Where's like your go-to? You guys got a go-to?
Honestly, I'd say Pizza Factory. That's what we're known for, so
yeah, these guys they like each other and they don't want to leave. I sometimes say, hey, guys, we got to go home now, you know. I remember we got Coach Acevedo here for his first year. He came over from Carruthers, and I remember him in the summer telling him, like, he was out with the guys doing the mound prep, and he was shocked. Like, it was taking a long time. And I said, no, they're going to take a long time because they just like talking.
Yeah,
they just like hanging out talking. And you know, even when the mound's done, they're going to hang out there and talk until it's like, hey, guys, we got to go eat dinner. We got to get home and see our families. But that's just the mentality of this group. They like each other. We had a real, you know, little interesting story. We brought up some young kids, which we don't always do. That's not, you know, playoff time. It's kind of something we talk about with the team. Hey, do we go with the guys that got us here? And this year we decided, you know what, we need some help at practice and things. So we invited, you know, 9 guys. We said, hey, I sent out a little invite to them. Said, hey, look, I kind of painted a picture that it's not going to be very glamorous. You're going to come out. You're going to run bases for us. You're going to shag. You're not suiting up. We're not putting you in the dugout. The whole bit. And I just said, basically, I just threw that out invitation out there. Every one of them said yes. And every one of them showed up. And they're just running bases hard, giving us live looks. And they're just getting after it. And, you know, they did their job. We're excited about it. And like I said, I told them they're not going to be in the dugout. It's going to be this group. And Bubba's actually the one that came to me. He's, hey, coach, can we have those guys in the dugout? They're really helping us. And I said, hey, if that's what you guys want, this is your year. This is your group, you know. Talk to your captains, and they all came back. Yeah, we want them there. And sure as heck, it's been great. They're in the dugout. They're experiencing it. After game one, I said to everyone, hey, are you guys ready to play in this game? And they're just like, are you at this level yet? And they're just like, no. And I go, that's right, you're not. So that's how hard we're going to have to work through the summer and the fall, because you have to get ready. There's no other option. You got to be ready for this level, and this is where, you know, because it's the expectation.
That's awesome.
So it really was and like I said, it's credit to this guy. He's such a leader. I tell you what, you come watch our game. I'm always worried they're going to send him back in the dugout, because he's always the guy going back. Come on, let's stay. Like, he is our motivational leader. I mean, he wants this thing. He even told me, what did you tell me yesterday?
I want him more than everyone.
Yeah, that's what he said. That's what he told me. I want this more than anyone. And I go, yep, I know you do. And he's on a mission. He's making sure everybody else is on that mission with him. He's matured a lot. He's just like, man, he's a great player, but he's a great kid. He's a great leader, and I really am excited about his future. He's gonna do well. It's just as are a bunch of our guys. I mean, we got five guys going on to play in college next year, so it's really exciting that, you know, that these guys are so fired up about baseball and they know the challenges that are coming, how difficult it is at the next level, but they're ready to embrace that as well.
I want to explore that more with Bubba, because that's fantastic here. That's a great story, and I think it does talk about your maturity, right? Like, coming in your freshman year, right, you probably have, you know, dreams of winning Valley Championships and putting up records. You know, you're a star quarterback. You put up some crazy numbers the last couple of years. Those haven't gone unnoticed. The maturity factor for you, right, why has that been important to you, and how has that evolution been for you?
Maturity is something that I've had to staple throughout my high school career. I started off, you know, kind of quiet as a freshman. Sophomore year, I started noticing that I felt like I was better than everyone, so I was just too loud with it. And then my junior year came, and I just felt rowdy. And then I talked to Coach Fever. I had a long talk with him, and he said I just be humble, just go do it and show them on the field, not off it. And so throughout then, I've just been trying to become more humble and just trying to focus on what's next and just stay with my teammates, don't have to do nothing. You know, just no talking, just let my play talk.
Well, he's comes from a long list of great athletes in Fowler history, and I know you've been around the program for a long time. Obviously, you've seen a lot of good players. How refreshing and neat is that for you as a coach, right, to follow somebody basically their whole life, I would presume, right?
Yep.
And then to get them as a player and see the maturity. And he just spelled it out for himself, right? I mean, he recognized for himself. How satisfying as a coach is that for you to see?
Oh, that's great. That warms my heart to hear that. But again, I wanted it so bad for this kid because he's such a great kid. And other coaches, as I talk to him, I just tell him, you know, hey, you would love to have this kid on your team. Not just for his ability, you know, but it's for who he is. He is a great kid. I mean, and so I really want the best for him for the future. I'm excited for next week. I know he's ready to go, and I know our team's ready to go. So, like I said, I'm just super proud of him because, again, he has ambitions to go on and keep playing this game. And so all I try to do is paint that picture of what you have to do to get there. You know, we've been doing it a long time. I know what it takes. I know what, you know, I've seen others do it. And I just want to make sure I do my part in helping him get there.
So gunning for another Central Section Championship. How many total? Remind me again, Coach. How many total in program history?
In program, well, in my era, we have six. We got to the finals two other times. So been there eight, and then I don't know if it counts to throw mine in as a player, but we got two.
we count those.
Yeah, we got,
obviously
we got two my junior and senior year. So like I said, been to 10 and won eight of them. So we're going for number 11 because I still think that one counts because those two that we got, I think those count.
Of course they do. Bubba, does Coach talk about those times at all, or is he just kind of humble with those? But does he let you know?
Sometimes he'll let us know. Sometimes he'll let us know.
And back then, right now, you're getting rings, Coach, and all this stuff. I won as a coach for Emmanuel in 95. All we got is a dang T-shirt.
I know, yeah.
Is that all you got? Yeah. Like back in those days, you just get a shirt and it says Valley Championship.
Yeah, and it was one I think it was pre-made, so it wasn't like a nice one that we make, you know,
no.
For all these guys. But yeah, it would have been cool to have a ring, but we didn't have that back then. And what's kind of funny is even just over the years, from, you know, starting in 2001, if you look at all the rings, they keep getting bigger bigger each year. So
I think
our first one looks like a class ring or something.
Yeah. And now they look like probably what Super Bowl rings looked like 20 years ago, the big fat thing. All right, so I assume, right, is it safe to say, I know Cranford, he tipped his hand, who he's starting on the mound. He's going with Gavin and then Jensen to relieve. Safe to assume this guy's, or do you not want to say?
Well,
he's kind of looking at you right now.
I'm not sure yet. No, I'm kidding. He has the ball.
All right. No brainer.
Yeah,
all right.
No, he has the ball. Yaw's in relief. That's our plan, and that's just been our plan. Those two guys have stepped up as our 1A and 1B, and then the rest of the guys are all good in relief. So we could go to any one of the rest of them, knowing that, you know, that they'll give us their best, And like I said, our deal is 3 more days to grind and practice and just keep getting better and don't waste any minutes and just be as ready as we can be for that game.
So it's Thursday, right?
Yes,
Thursday. All right. So, Bubba, how anxious are you going to be, man? Are you just kind of like starting to think about it already? Like the umpire points at you, play ball, play on that field again?
Oh, yeah. I've been thinking about it. I feel like God has always had a plan for me. You know, I've been playing 3 sports for 4 years. And last season I was actually in Valley and I lost for basketball. So I think that God has paved the way for me and made this the reason why. So I want to go out there and fulfill my dreams of getting the ring. And if that's with the baseball team, that's with the baseball team. So.
All right. Can't wait. All right. Last question here. We got about another minute. Next year's plans or what? Are you going to play ball? Are you going to try to play football, baseball? What's your plans for next year?
The plan is to play baseball for sure at COS. But I'm kind of on the ropes for football. But as of right now, that's the plan, too, to play both sports at COS.
Ooh, all right. All right. Going to double dip. Thank you guys for coming on. I appreciate you driving from Fowler all the way up here to First String Sports in Fresno. I'll talk about Fowler baseball, and you guys are going to be playing on the big stage, man. I can't wait. Congratulations.
Thank you, Paul. I really appreciate you having us up here. It's great to come up and talk about Fowler baseball. I mean, it's something that I love. I mean, you know, we could hang out here all day and talk about Fowler baseball. It's the history, you know, way back into the 80s. Obviously, there were teams before that were good, but the real program started, you know, when Keith Snyder brought the Fresno State system to Fowler back in 1980. That's when this thing started, and it hasn't changed much in all this time. We probably do 90% of what we did back in 1980. It's what we do. It's a recipe for success that other coaches ahead of me, Gilbert Uriarte, Dan Wild, those guys, we all have coached together. Jim Cranford, you know, taught me a lot of baseball. I coached with him for a long time. He was at Fowler for a long time. And again, it's just been a great history of there have been some good coaches that have just paved the way. And I'm just, you know, blessed to be here and continue the tradition.
And it helps to have a player as talented as Bubba Smith and bought into the program as well. Thank you guys for coming on. Really appreciate
Thank
it.
Thanks
we
again.
Appreciate it.
You bet. All right, we're going to take a break. And I hope Labby's here. I think he's around the corner. I'm going to talk to Josh Lamadera about more baseball in the Central section. You're listening to it all on 1430 ESPN. All right, welcome back, Central Valley Sports Report. Actually, we're going to have to call Josh Lamberdere. So, Jorge, if you can hear me, I'm going to text you Labby's phone number, and we'll get him on the show. He actually got caught at a baseball field. What a surprise on that one, right? Red Sox scout doing some workouts right now. So I'll text Jorge his number. We'll give him a call here in just a second. But, yeah, just great conversation with Bill Fever and Bubba Smith. And Bill, he's a lifer. He's a Fowler guy through and through. Obviously, he played there, has coached there for a long time, and he talks about the tradition and off air right now. He's just saying, yeah, we just haven't had a lot of lulls in the program. At all, it's been very, very consistent, and it's a testament to the lower level programs that they have, the investment by the parents. It's just a full town deal with the baseball program at Fowler. One of the things I appreciate greatly about Bill is he loves his town, he loves his job, and he's got this huge spreadsheet of all the championships and the records. And everything about Fowler baseball. So yeah, they're in a Valley Championship game again, and we really didn't get into last year's game against Kingsburg. You did mention that he and Coach Cranford coached together for a long time, but that game yesterday, you could tell Kingsburg was loaded last year. The Hirschhorn twins. Jensen's older brothers were studs on that team, and they just had a really good baseball team. And you could tell Fowler was, you know, was going to have to play a really good baseball game to win that one. And so anyway, it's it's a great tradition, and Fowler, good to catch up with them. We're actually going to take a break, and we're going to call Labby. We're going to talk about baseball in the Central Section, some of these players that he's been able to evaluate and check out, and maybe something about parents. What do parents need to do to try to prepare their kid for the next level, whether that be junior college, Division I baseball, or maybe even be drafted? So we're going to take a small break. We're going to bring on Josh in just a second. You're listening to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. All right, we got a hold of Labby, and what a surprise, right? He's at a baseball field right now doing some workouts and just a baseball guy through and through, and I love having him on the show. We bring him on about once a year. We have a great conversation. So, Labby, how you doing this morning?
Good, and just want to apologize, man. I like sitting next to you in the first string, but I lost track of time farting around with my kids, so apologize. But thanks for having me, as always. Enjoy talking about the local kids and just baseball in general.
Absolutely. So you are a scout for the Boston Red Sox. You travel up and down the state. Just, so kind of exactly what is your area? Where do you drive up and down? Do you go all the way up to Oregon, maybe even to Washington, or you stick basically in California?
I do the northern region. So my territory is from I go down to Bakersfield. I shoot over into the San Luis Obispo, Santa Maria area, all the way up the coast to Oregon border, and then into Northwest Nevada. So I've got pretty much half Nevada and all of Northern California.
So the last couple of weeks, where's been some of your hot spots? Is this kind of a time where you really ramp things up, or are you more checking out kids at the beginning of the year, or is this a heavy time for you?
We're kind of winding down our scouting season for the most part. It gets really hot and heavy about middle of February when the D1s kick off. I mean, it's baseball every day. And then pretty much during the week, I'm catching a high school game, spent a lot of time over in the Santa Cruz in Walnut Creek area, got a couple arms that way, a couple position players in San Jose. So I've spent quite a bit of my time up in the Bay. I've still been able to catch a lot of local baseball, which has been good. We've got a lot of kids for next year potentially, and it's good to just kind of make note of them and be able to come back and see them again when they're ready.
So let's talk about some of these kids in the Central Section. We talked a lot the last few weeks, especially today, about Trey Morris and Jensen Hirschhorn. That matchup yesterday was I mean, just as advertised. Who are some dudes that you can speak of around here that you turned your attention to?
Locally, I think Trey is, you know, Trey's put himself in a really good position. Coming back off of Tommy John, I thought he, you know, the summer he didn't really get to showcase how good a pitcher he could be. He ended up getting with Marcus Walden this offseason, and, you know, Marcus did a really good job of getting Trey. He just refined his delivery. I thought he was getting over his front side a lot better. The velocity not only crept up, but he was able to hold it throughout his starts, and his slider was pretty good. You know, there's still some stuff on his secondary that I think he can sharpen up, but, you know, the kid's got a really good work ethic. He's a humble, hard worker. So you just, you know, the ball's in his court. It's going to be up to him. He's going to be going to a great program in Oregon State, and who knows, man, maybe one of us 30 clubs is going to call him and see if he wants to sign a professional career. We don't know yet.
So looking at his body type, and I was able to chat with him just about an hour before yesterday's game, and I kind of forgot just how well put together he is. Obviously, he's put in the work in the weight room. You know, he's got a very solid bottom half as well. Like, what like physically for a high school kid, especially like somebody like Trey Morris, what are some of the things that you look at with a pitcher like that?
I think, you know, obviously velocity is something that jumps off the board to us. But then, you know, you got to look at the package that's producing the velocity. Like, you know, what type of – is there any durability concerns? How does he move athletically? Is it a loose body, stiff body? Is it a projectable body? Is it a body that's going to continue to get bigger, stronger, leaner? Or is he kind of a guy that might be maxed out? You know, those are all things you take in consideration. And Trey still got a little baby face on him. he did a really good job with his body, I thought. Just, you know, I made that reference. You know, I noted that to him when I went in his house. I said, man, I you did a great job with your body. Like, he got really focused, and he was on a really good routine. He was waking up early, like, you know, sacrificing. That's what guys that you know, guys that want to be good, they sacrifice sometimes to put themselves in a position to be good players. And hats off to Trey. He did that this offseason, and it's showing.
I'm curious, Josh, about pitchers coming out of high school. So, you know, an 18-year-old kid compared to a college kid that's 22 years old, body type. Like, where are you guys at scouting-wise as far as drafting pitchers, the difference between, you know, a high school kid and a college kid that's going to be more refined and, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years older?
I think that's you kind of hit the nail on the head there when you said refined. That, you know, there's so much risk in a high school arm. You're looking at, you know, is he going to be able to reach those projections? I mean, because it's kind of a projection game on a high school guy. Out stuff. So, you know, you're really hanging your hat on either the athleticism or the makeup or how are they going to get to that stuff? And that's where you got to have a lot of conviction and you got to, you know, spend a lot of time with these kids to get to know them and find out what they're all about. And what's going to drive them to reach their peak or the pinnacle of their careers. So, high school pitching's tough, man. Typically, yeah. we don't dabble in the high school market much on the pitching side, just because of the risk. But I do think that you're going to start seeing more teams, take chances, I should say.
And it's tough, right? Throwing money out to a high school kid as well compared to a college kid. All right, so I'm just curious from your perspective on another kid we've talked a lot about today is that's Jensen Hirschhorn down in Kingsburg, 6'7", and gosh, I stood next to him after the game, and he looked even taller than 6'7", man. He might end up being 6'8" by his senior year. The skill set is there, left-handed hitter, the ball is coming off his bat differently. He's hitting oppo homers now, and obviously he's been clocked, you know, in the mid-90s as well. A kid like that, so tall and lean, is able to throw a baseball and hit a ball like that. Like, what's the ceiling? What's the talent like that? How often does that come by? What's it look like for him?
Man, we're kind of in the era, you know, the Ohtani era where everybody's kind of a two-way guy, and you know, at this point where he's at, I mean, it's really hard to specify like what he's gonna be. He does some really interesting things on both sides of the ball. You watch him on the mound, it's pretty easy. Mid-90s, I mean, he was 93, 94 last night with a pretty good little slider, and then he gets up in the box, and it's a really loose and projectable bodied swing, and there's power projection there's some ability to move the ball around the field, like barrel manipulation. Like, man, he's a really interesting prospect that we haven't had around here in a long time, of his caliber, I should say. But the body alone, man, I was blown away. I just kind of snuck out to Sierra Pacific one day and was kind of, you know, hiding out by the trees just to see how he looked. And you know, and I'd always, man, I'll be the first to tell you, my first thoughts of him was always as a pitcher. That's always what I'd seen him as. And, man, he swung the bat a couple times, and I changed my opinion. Like, there's something to him on both sides of it. So, you know, moving forward, he's just a really interesting prospect, good athlete, baseball family. You know, Oscar's a good baseball guy, been at Fresno Pacific for years, man. He's built a great program over there. And, you know, it's just a baseball bloodline family, like, you know, and he's the baby of the bunch, too. He's the baby of the best.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Murph Gray and the season that he's been having. I saw some of his highlights in that great game that they played last night. The Dogs are playing, I think, at 12 o'clock for the championship game. So Murph, what do you like about him? Where do you see him right now?
Murph's going to be, you know, he's really caught fire towards the end of the season. It's something he did last year. Big game player, seems to just always come through in the clutch. I think that's just kind of a testament of what kind of kid he is. If you haven't had the opportunity to meet Murph or talk to him, he's a great kid. Just super positive, very humble, really big team guy. But he's put himself in a position. He's going to be at the top of the draft, top 2-3 rounds, I imagine. You know, he might be a steal. You know, you get him and refine some things with him, and all of a sudden he's going to hit 30 home runs in the big leagues. I think that's kind of what you dream about with him.
Yeah, good stuff. And you're right about the clutch situations that he comes through in, and just how great of a kid he is. I mean, gosh, 6'3", 6'4", 220 pounds right now. So, yeah, we're definitely rooting for Murph. He's a Valley guy through and through as well. He's really endeared himself to the Central Valley. Josh, I'm always curious about your advice. And, you know, there are a lot of parents and even coaches listening to the show right now. What advice would you give parents, especially if they got a kid, right, that's, you know, has dreams of becoming a college baseball player, maybe even a pro baseball player? There's so many camps. I know you run a phenomenal summer program as well. Like, what do you suggest for parents just as far as, like, how far to push their kids, how much money to invest, all those little things that go into what a baseball player might look like?
Man, you're trying to get me in trouble, man.
No, this is a good thing. Give some good advice.
Oh, I'm just kidding. No, the longer I do this, it kind of bums me out that, you know, I see a lot of advertisements for youth baseball and you can turn it into a business. You know, it's gotten into a money-making industry. It's really hard these days. Just look at the college atmosphere, you know. You got the portal. There's nothing that's real safe. So venturing out in that is, it's a dangerous waters to swim in. My advice is to, and you got to surround yourself around baseball people that have been there. They've been through it, that understand the process, that aren't going to lead you all over the country. I think also is you got to understand what type of tool set you have, as a player. You got to be realistic with what your goals are. If you're throwing 83 miles an hour, you're probably not going to the SEC. It's really hard, you know, these days, in my opinion. But I think kids need to practice more. The fundamentals of the game are being lost. I watch baseball every day, Paul. It's not getting better, in my opinion. The games are sloppier. The hitting's less and less, a lot more walks. Like, just become a better baseball player. Spend more time in the cage. Spend more time taking ground balls. Spend more time getting fly balls, live repetitions. It's not always go out and pay and play games. That's not development. It really isn't. Development comes at the ballpark. It comes, you know, inside places that people eyeballs aren't, you know, like, you do it quietly. You don't have to post it on Twitter. Go about your business. There's a lot of ways to be a good baseball player, and self-promoting isn't one of them.
We got about four more minutes here with Josh Lamadera, Red Sox scout, played in the majors and played at Fresno State, had a great career there, and it's a Porterville guy, right? Menachie grad as well. All right, so what's the biggest difference, Josh, that you see between a JUCO player, a D1 player, and a pro player?
Wow, that's a good – from a JUCO
player. I know this
– JUCO – let's say JUCO's typically they're solid players typically. They're either lacking something in the classroom or something physically. College players typically have the physical tools. They might be lacking strength or a little bit refinement to their game, but academically typically they're fairly solid. And then a pro player pro players they're going to have the tools. There might be some rigidness or quirks to their game, but they're either throwing the ball hard, running really fast, or hitting it really hard and far. So, you know, what those guys end up becoming is kind of up to them, but every level is a little bit different, and typically the biggest difference is the speed of the game. It's going to be much faster. Even the transition from the college to the pro game is faster. So, you know, you just got to get in tune with the speed of the game to keep up.
Yeah, all good advice. And yeah, I mean, you see players that think that they're a D1 player, like, oh, well, you're lacking at this. You can't go to right field. You're swinging at all these sliders on the outside. You haven't made those adjustments. Those are all things that are certainly very, very important. Josh, we only got a couple minutes, gosh dang it, and love to pick your brain on this stuff. All right, baseball cards, right? Last time you came on the show, yeah, only had about 30 seconds. So what are some cards that you're chasing right now? Who are some hot guys?
Man, I haven't been chasing anybody hot. I've been chasing the kid that I took in the first round in 2020, a kid named Nick York. He made his major league debut last year. Topps Chrome Black came out, and I actually completed his rainbow. I'm pretty excited.
Oh,
I got his rainbow. So I've got from red to blue, 5, 10, 15, 25, 50, 75, 99, 125, and 199. So I got all the colors. That's kind of been my little personal collection that I've been chasing the last couple months since he debuted. So more of a PC thing than chasing the big name guys. I did hit a Ellie De La Cruz red out of 5 patch the other day. That's a pretty big card, so I was pretty excited. Topps Diamond Icons.
You're definitely gonna have to text me a picture of that. That sounds legit.
Yes.
All right, Josh.
It's fun.
So,
it's a fun hobby, Paul.
I know it is. And right, I could go to Target, you know, and say I'm going to pick up some sodas and some food and maybe some paper towels, and then I walk by the baseball cards. I'm like, hey, I could get this, no problem. It's a lot of fun.
You might pull a Sandy Koufax 1 out of 5 auto like old Trevor Harper did from Clovis North today. You never know, out of a blaster, right?
Oh my gosh, yep, that's one of the fun of ripping baseball cards. Well, Josh, unfortunately our time is up. I really appreciate you coming on. I wish I had more time with you because we could talk baseball all day. So thanks for coming on, and I'm sure I'll run into you soon.
Hey, anytime, Paul. Look forward to seeing you at the yard, bud.
You bet. All right, Josh Lamandera, Red Sox scout, the Valley guy through and through. He's a lot of fun. He's very approachable, too, so if you ever see him at a game, you can definitely bend his ear a bit. Hey, thanks for listening, guys. Really appreciate it. Lots of good stuff. Thanks for tuning in and bearing with a lot of the talk about controversial plays, but we like to talk about a lot of good stuff as well. Thanks to Gabe Camarillo for jumping on, Jim Cranford, Bill Fever, Bubba Smith, and, of course, Josh Lamandera. Next week, Central Section Championships in baseball and softball. Lots of fun stuff. Again, have a great Memorial Day weekend, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.